Morgan will describe himself a little bit here and give his lecture. We'll see the Earth disappear.
Good morning. My name is John Horrigan. I'm a historical astronomer. I love the history of astronomy. I'm a backyard astronomer as well. Love looking up into the heavens. And today's talk is about Earth under siege. It's abbreviated. There are some technical terms, so please stay with me. I'll try to get you through this as easily as possible and not to confuse you. But at the conclusion of my lecture, there's some great videos of fireballs that I think the kids would like. We're going to be talking about near-Earth objects. Today we're going to focus on near-Earth asteroids, not as much as doomsday comets, near-Earth comets, but near-Earth asteroids approach the Earth within 1.3 astronomical units, or the distance from the Earth to the Sun. I'll explain that in a moment. They're classified in four major categories: Ateras, Atens, Apollos, and Amors, dependent upon their axes and their orbit as they cross the Earth's plane. In terms of orbital elements, NEOs are asteroids and comets with perihelion distance less than 1.3 astronomical units, which is the distance from Earth to the Sun. Near-Earth comets are further restricted to include only short-period comets. That's orbital periods of less than 200 years. The vast majority of NEOs are asteroids, referred to as near-Earth asteroids. You'll see them as PHAs, potentially hazardous asteroids, etc. And as I mentioned, they're divided into four groups according to their perihelion distance. Their aphelion distance, that's the apex of their orbit, and their semi-major axes. One astronomical unit, you'll be hearing me talking about that today, is 4,306,642 miles away from the Earth. Potentially hazardous asteroids, PHAs, are currently defined based on parameters that measure the asteroid's potential to make threatening close approaches to the Earth. Specifically, all asteroids with an Earth minimum orbit intersection distance of 0.05 AU or less, and an absolute magnitude of 22.0 or less, are considered PHAs. Again, I told you, there's going to be a little tech talk. In other words, asteroids that can't get any closer to the Earth than 0.05 AUs, that's roughly 4.6 million miles, or smaller than about 500 feet in diameter, are not considered potentially hazardous asteroids. There are currently, as of today, 1,116 known PHAs. This potential to make close Earth approaches does not mean a PHA will impact the Earth. It only means there's a possibility for such a threat. Now, how did we get here on Earth? How do we stand here today in 2010 in the Situate Library on Astronomy Day? Well, some near-Earth objects contain carbon-based molecules and water, ice, and collisions of these objects with Earth have significant agents of biologic as well as geologic change. It was called the Late Heavy Bombardment, and it happened some 3.8 billion years ago. The earliest known fossils on Earth date from 3.5 billion years ago, and there is evidence that biological activity took place even earlier, just at the end of the period of known as the Late Heavy Bombardment. Once the early rain of comets and asteroids upon the Earth subsided somewhat, subsequent impacts may well have delivered the water and carbon-based molecules to the Earth's surface, thus providing the building blocks of life itself. Subsequent cometary collisions may have wiped out many of the developing life forms, allowing only the most adaptable species to evolve further. The most famous is the Chicxulub impact crater. It now seems likely that a comet or asteroid struck near the Yucatan Peninsula in Mexico some 65 million years ago and caused a massive extinction of more than 75% of the Earth's living organisms, including the dinosaurs. At that time, the mammals were small burrowing creatures that seemed to survive the catastrophic impact without too much difficulty. Because many of their larger competitors were destroyed, these mammals, i.e. our ancestors, flourished. This is now a satellite view of this crater. Since we humans evolved from these primitive mammals, we may owe our current preeminence atop Earth's food chain to the collision of comets and asteroids with the Earth. On a daily basis, about 100 tons of interplanetary material drifts down to the Earth's surface. Most of the smallest interplanetary particles that reach the Earth's surface are the tiny dust particles that are released by the comets as their ice is vaporized in the solar neighborhood. The vast majority of the larger interplanetary material that reaches the Earth's surface originates as the collision fragments of asteroids that have run into one another some eons ago. With an average interval of about 100 years, rocky or iron asteroids larger than about 50 meters would be expected to reach the Earth's surface and cause local disasters or produce the tidal waves that can inundate low-lying coastal areas. Now you're going to hear about the Torino scale, and this assesses asteroid and cometary impact predictions. You have the lowest, which is zero, up here, which means there's no likelihood of a collision, all the way up to 10, which is known as an ELE, an extinction level event. Arguably, Torino 8 through 10 could be devastating and cause life as we know it to cease here on Earth. That's a photo of the meteor crater in Arizona. An impact event is the collision of a large meteorite, asteroid, comet, or other celestial object with the Earth or another planet. Throughout recorded history, hundreds of minor impact events and exploding bolides have been reported, with some occurrences causing deaths, injuries, property damage, or other significant localized consequences. And we're going to look at some of those cases. Impact events have been a plot and background element in science fiction since knowledge of real impacts became established in the scientific mainstream. Has anybody seen the movie Deep Impact? Small objects frequently collide with the Earth. The size of the object and the frequency that such objects hit the Earth varies significantly. Asteroids with a 1 kilometer or 0.62 mile diameter strike the Earth every 500,000 years or so on average. Large collisions with 5 kilometer, that's 3 miles across objects, happen approximately once every 10 million years. The last known impact of an object of 6 miles or more in diameter was at the Cretaceous Tertiary extinction event 65 million years ago. Asteroids with diameters of 5 to 10 meters, 16 to 33 feet, enter the Earth's atmosphere approximately once per year with as much energy as Little Boy, the atomic bomb dropped on Hiroshima, approximately 15 kilotons of TNT. Yes, sir, what was your question?
There was something in the popular press like a month ago about the crater they discovered in Brazil.
Yes, I'm going to talk about that, yep. These ordinarily explode in the upper atmosphere, and most or all of the solids are vaporized. Objects with diameters of over 164 feet strike the Earth approximately once every 1,000 years, producing explosions comparable to the one known to have detonated above Tunguska in Siberia in 1908. At least one known asteroid with a diameter of over 1 kilometer or 0.62 miles, known as 1950 DA, has a possibility of colliding with Earth in March of 2880, with a Torino scale rating of 2, so that's not very dangerous. Earth has gone through periods of abrupt and catastrophic change, some due to the impact of large asteroids and comets on the planet. Some of these impacts may have caused massive climate change and the extinction of large numbers of plant and animal species. The moon is widely attributed to a huge impact early in Earth's history. It's been proposed that the water in the Earth's oceans was delivered by impacting comets, and some have suggested that the origins of life may have been influenced by impacting objects by bringing organic chemicals or life forms to the Earth's surface. This is a theory known as exogenesis. Gene Shoemaker was the first to prove that meteor impacts have affected the Earth. Large-scale terrestrial impacts of the sort that produced the Barringer Crater, locally known as Meteor Crater, northeast of Flagstaff, Arizona, are rare, and that's Meteor Crater. It was not until 1903 to 1905 that the Barringer Crater was correctly identified as being an impact crater, not due to volcanism, and it was not until 1963 when Gene Shoemaker conclusively proved this hypothesis. The first observation of a major impact event occurred in 1994. This was the collision of the comet Shoemaker-Levy 9 with Jupiter. To date, no such events have been observed on Earth. Based on crater formation, rates determined from the Earth's closest celestial partner, the Moon, astrogeologists have determined that during the last 600 million years, the Earth has been struck by 60 objects of a diameter of 5 kilometers or 3 miles or more. The smallest of these impactors would release the equivalent of 10 million megatons of TNT and leave a crater 95 kilometers or 60 miles across. For comparison, the largest nuclear weapon ever detonated, the Tsar Bomba, which is a Russian weapon, had a yield of 50 megatons. Some major impactors include Barringer Crater in Arizona, the Rio Cuarto Craters in Argentina, the Lonar Crater Lake in India, the Henbury Crater in Australia, the Kali Crater in Estonia, and the Wabar Craters in Arabia. A Chinese record states that 10,000 people were killed in Shaanxi Province in 1490 by a hail of falling stones. Some astronomers surmise that this may describe the breakup of a large asteroid, although they find the number of deaths implausible. In Vredefort, South Africa crater, thank you, sir, one of the largest ever to impact the Earth, estimated at over 10 kilometers or 6 miles wide, although it's believed by many that the original size of the impact structure could have been 250 kilometers in diameter, or possibly larger than the Wilkes Land crater in Antarctica. Dating back to 2.23 million years, it's the oldest astrobeam found on Earth so far, with a radius of 190 kilometers, and is also the most deeply eroded. Vredefort Dome bears witness to the world's greatest known single energy release event, which caused devastating global change, including, according to many scientists, major evolutionary changes. The Mweka crater may have resulted from a modern impact event. The crater is located south of the Snares Islands on the southern New Zealand shelf, and it's approximately 12 miles wide. Material extracted from the Seipel Dome ice core meltwater indicates that the impact occurred around 1443 AD. So that was not too long ago. Some explosions in the upper atmosphere include the Sakhote Allen meteorite, and that fell in Primorye, far eastern Russia, in 1947, and the Revelstoke fireball of 1965, which occurred over the snows of British Columbia, Canada. The most significant recorded impact in recent times was the Tunguska event, which occurred in Siberia, Russia in 1908. This incident involved an explosion that was probably caused by the airburst of an asteroid or a comet 3.1 to 6.2 miles above the Earth's surface, felling an estimated 80 million trees over 830 square miles. Now, there are asteroids that are larger than 5 yards in size, and some of them have made quite close passes, including 2009 DD45. We're going to look at that in just a moment. Potentially hazardous asteroids, PHAs, are space rocks that are larger than approximately 100 meters that come closer to the Earth than 0.05 astronomical units, the distance from the Earth to the Sun. Meteoroids are smaller than 55 yards, and we've had a few brushbacks, and we'll look at those, including 2004 FU-162 and 2004 FH. So on April 23rd, 2010, as I mentioned, there are 1,116 potentially hazardous asteroids. LD means lunar distance. One lunar distance equals 384,401 kilometers, the distance between the Earth and the Moon. 1D also equals 0.00256 astronomical units. And mag is the visual magnitude of the asteroid on the date of its closest approach. And here are some other close approach asteroids, 2010 GB23, 2010 GF7. This is a photograph of Jupiter taken in 1994 when a comet hit the lower hemisphere. The beaming of Jupiter. Comet Shoemaker-Levy 9 scarred Jupiter in 1994. On July 19, 2009, a new black spot about the size of Earth was discovered in Jupiter's southern hemisphere by an amateur astronomer. Jet Propulsion Laboratory scientists confirmed that another impact event on Jupiter had occurred, probably a small undiscovered comet or other icy body. The 1994 impact of Comet Shoemaker-Levy 9 with Jupiter served as a wake-up call, and astronomers responded by starting programs such as Lincoln Near-Earth Asteroid Research, or LINEAR, Near-Earth Asteroid Tracking, or NEAT, Lowell Observatory Near-Earth Object Search, or LONEOS, and several others which have drastically increased the rate of asteroid discovery, and you're going to see that in the chart in a moment. In 1998, two comets were observed plunging into the sun in close succession. The first of these was on June 1st, and the second the next day. Now, what about Earth's sun, the moon? Well, the leading theory of the moon's origin is the giant impact theory, which states that the Earth was once hit by a planetoid the size of Mars. If this theory holds, then the impact was almost certainly the largest ever to hit Earth. Now, let's look at some of the top 30 near-Earth asteroids. The closest was 2008 TC3, an incredible 0.000043 astronomical units. And as I trek down this list, we're going to look at some of these closely. It was startling to discover that the 30 closest passes of near-Earth asteroids out of 30, 28 of them have occurred since 2002. Now again, you can attribute that to the programs that I mentioned previously that have been dedicated to the discovery of Earth approaching asteroids. But it's kind of incredible that all these close passes, they go by two or three per year. And again, they just whiz by the Earth, most of them undetected. I spoke about ELEs, or extinction level events. And in September 15th of 2007, a chondritic meteor crashed near the village of Caracas in southeastern Peru near Lake Titicaca, leaving a water-filled hole and spewing gases across the surrounding area. Many residents became ill, apparently from the noxious gases, shortly after the impact. On October 7, 2008, a meteoroid labeled 2008 TC3 was tracked for 20 hours as it approached the Earth and as it fell through the atmosphere and impacted in Sudan. This was the first time an object was detected before it reached the atmosphere, and hundreds of pieces of the meteorite were discovered from the Nubian Desert. We're going to look at that in just a second. In the past 540 million years, there have been five generally accepted major mass extinctions, or ELEs, that on average extinguished half of all species on Earth. One of the largest mass extinctions to have affected life on Earth was in the Permian-Triassic, which ended the Permian period 250 million years ago and killed off 90% of all species. Life on Earth took 30 million years to recover. Asteroid 2010, AL30. Well, it happened on January 13th of this year. An object estimated to be between 30 and 50 feet across flew by the Earth at a distance of just 80,000 miles. That's only one-third of the way from here to the moon. Its discovery was announced 2 days before its flyby, and it would have disintegrated high in the upper atmosphere with the energy of a nuclear bomb. Asteroid 2009, DD45. On April 9, 2009, it flew past the Earth at roughly twice the distance of the highest Earth-orbiting satellites. At around 8:30 a.m., just under 45,000 miles, it flew above the surface of the planet. It was about the size of a 10-story building. It was similar in size to a rock that exploded over Tunguska, Siberia in 1908, which flattened 80 million trees across an 800-square-mile area. Asteroid 2004, FU-162. On March 31st, 2004, it measured about 20 feet across and came within about 4,000 miles of the Earth. A meteoroid, which passed within one Earth radius, that's approximately 6,400 kilometers, of the surface of the Earth, or 2.02 Earth radii from the center of the Earth, and as of 2008, this was the third or fourth closest approach ever of an asteroid. The discovery wasn't announced until several months later, on August 22nd, 2004. And just as a rule of thumb, geostationary satellites orbit at 5.6 Earth radii, and GPS satellites orbit at 3.17 Earth radii from the center of the Earth. Only observed, this is now asteroid 2004 FU-162 continued, it was only observed four times in the space of 44 minutes. It couldn't be followed up, and no pre-discovery images have been found. Nevertheless, its calculated orbit is considered quite determinate. It would burn up from atmospheric friction before striking the ground in the case of an impact. Objects under 50 meters in diameter are generally classified as a meteoroid instead of an asteroid. And on March 26, 2010, it came within 2.3 million kilometers of Earth. Asteroid 2009 VA. It was a previously undiscovered asteroid that came within 8,700 miles of Earth on November 6, 2009. Astronomers noticed it only 15 hours before its closest approach. It came only about two Earth radii from impacting our home planet. This is the third closest non-known, non-impacting Earth approach on record for a cataloged asteroid. And on average, objects the size of 2009 VA pass this close about twice per year and impact Earth about once every 5 years. And there's its pass. Asteroid 2004 FH. An Earth grazer. This was discovered on March 15, 2004 by the NASA-funded Linear Asteroid Survey. The object is roughly 30 meters in diameter and passed just 26,000 miles above the Earth's surface on March 18, 2004. It's the 11th closest approach to Earth recorded as of the 21st of November 2008. And there's an image of it.
It's tracking the asteroid itself.
Mm-hmm. Had this object hit Earth, it probably would have detonated high in the upper atmosphere. It might have produced a blast measured in hundreds of kilotons of TNT, but it may not have produced any ground-level effect. Despite its relatively small size, about 30 meters, it's still the third largest asteroid detected, coming closer to the Earth than the Moon. And it will not make another close approach to Earth until 2044, when it will be no closer than 1.4 million kilometers. 2004 FH also has the distinction of having the lowest inclination of any known near-Earth asteroids. And now, the famous ones, Apophis. This is Apophis here. It's known as 99942. It was reclassified from 2004 MN4. It caused a brief period of concern in December of 2004 because initial observations indicated a small probability, up to 2.7%, that it would strike the Earth in the year 2029. Additional observations provided improved predictions that eliminated the possibility of an impact on Earth or the Moon in 2029. However, a possibility remains that during the 2029 close encounter with the Earth, that Apophis will pass through a gravitational keyhole, a precise region in space no more than 600 meters across, that would set up a future impact on April 13, 2036. The possibility kept the asteroid at level 1 on the Torino impact hazard scale until August of 2006. It broke the record for the highest level on the Torino scale, being only for a short time a level 4 before it was lowered. On August 5, 2006, Apophis was lowered to a level 0 on the Torino scale, and as of October 7, 2009, the impact probability for April 13, 2036 is calculated as 1 in 250,000. An additional impact date in 2068 was also identified. The impact probability for that encounter is calculated as 3 in a million. In October 2005, it was predicted that the asteroid will pass just below the altitude of geosynchronous satellites, which are at 22,236 miles above the Earth. Such a close approach by an asteroid of this size is expected to occur only every 1,300 years or so. Apophis's length was estimated at 1,480 feet. In a close approach of Apophis on April 13, 2029, it will pass Earth within the orbits of geosynchronous communication satellites. The original NASA report on December 23, 2004 mentioned impact chances of around 1 in 300 in 2029. That's what alarmed the general public, and that's why the press picked up on it. What about Tutatis? 4179 Tutatis. Asteroid 4179 Tutatis, formerly known as 1989 AC, was discovered by C. Polis on January 4, 1989 at Casals, France. Tutatis' eccentric four-year orbit extends from just inside the Earth's orbit to the main asteroid belt between Mars and Jupiter. The plane of Tutatis' orbit is closer to the plane of Earth's orbit than any known several kilometer wide Earth orbit crossing asteroid, or ECA. Due to its very low orbital inclination and its orbital period of very nearly 4 years, Tutatis makes frequent close approaches to Earth, with currently a minimum possible distance of just 2.3 lunar distances, or the distance from Earth to the Moon. The approach on September 29, 2004 was particularly close at 0.0104 astronomical units. That's within four lunar distances from the Earth. And here's a computer simulation of what Tutatis looks like. And that's an actual photograph taken of Tutatis. And that's the streak as it was tracked across the sky. How do you defend Earth then? Well, on an average of every few hundred thousand years or so, asteroids larger than a kilometer could cause global disasters. In this case, the impact debris would spread throughout the Earth's atmosphere so that plant life would suffer from acid rain, partial blocking of sunlight, and from the firestorms resulting from heated impact debris raining back down upon the Earth's surface. Since their orbital paths often cross that of Earth, collisions with near-Earth objects have occurred in the past, and we should remain alert to the possibility of future close-Earth approaches. It seems prudent, then, to mount efforts to discover and study these objects, to characterize their sizes, compositions, and structures, and to keep an eye upon their future trajectories. Because of the ongoing search efforts to find nearly all the large NEOs, near-Earth objects, objects will occasionally be found to be on very close Earth-approaching trajectories. Great care must then be taken to verify any Earth collision predictions that are made. Given the extremely unlikely nature of such a collision, almost all of these predictions will turn out to be false alarms. However, if an object is verified to be on an Earth colliding trajectory, it seems likely that this collision possibly will be known several years prior to the actual event. Given several years' warning time, existing technology could be used to deflect the threatening object away from the Earth. The key point in this mitigation process is to find the threatening object years ahead of time so that an orderly international campaign can be mounted to send spacecraft to the threatening object. One of the techniques suggested for deflecting an asteroid includes nuclear fusion weapons set off above the surface to slightly change the asteroid's velocity without fracturing it. However, the trick is to gently nudge the asteroid out of harm's way and not to blow it up. This latter option, though popular in the movies, only creates a bigger problem when all the pieces encounter the Earth. Another option has been discussed includes the establishment of large solar sails on a small threatening object so that the pressure of sunlight could eventually redirect the object away from its predicted Earth collision. And now, just to conclude, we're going to look at some fireballs and look at some videos here. Well, hit by a meteor. The only reported fatality from meteorite impacts is an Egyptian dog that was killed in 1911 by the Nakhla meteorite, although this report is disputed. The meteorites that struck this area were identified in the 1980s as Martian in origin. The first known modern case of a human hit by a space rock occurred on November 30, 1954 in Sylacauga, Alabama. There, an 8.8-pound stone chondrite crashed through a roof and hit Ann Hodges' inner living room after it bounced off her radio. She was badly bruised. Several persons have since claimed to have been struck by meteorites, but no verifiable meteorites have resulted. Earth grazers and skippers. On August 10, 1972, a meteor, which became known as the Great Daylight Meteor, or the Great Daylight 1972 Fireball, was witnessed by many people moving north over the Rocky Mountains from the U.S. southwest to Canada. It was filmed by a tourist at the Grand Teton National Park in Wyoming with an 8mm color movie camera. The object was in the range of the size from a car to a house and could have ended its life in a Hiroshima-sized blast, but there was never any explosion. Analysis of the trajectory indicated that it never came lower than 36 miles off the ground, and the conclusion was that it had grazed the Earth's upper atmosphere for about 100 seconds and then skipped back out of the atmosphere to return to its orbit around the sun. And there's a photograph of it.
What's this? I knew some people camping out west that summer and saw that.
Wow! Really?
That was back in the pre-video days. So it was just somebody happened to have an 8mm movie camera and made a film.
It was about 2:30 in the afternoon, and some thought that was a rocket that was fired from Vandenberg Air Force Base in California. Let me see if I can get this video going here. There we go. Got one more. So there's the video. Oh, that's not showing up, is it? That's a shame. No, it's not running on your projector button.
Oh, it's running on your screen?
Yeah, but not
on. Oh, slow projector. We're not paying it enough.
Yeah.
Look.
The Western Australia Fireball. Okay, maybe this. Here we go. See that? Okay. This happened on Saturday, December 3rd, 2005, at 8:47 p.m. And Karen Cowper is enjoying a meal with his family at Hall's Head, which is near Perth, when they notice a bright tail in the sky and they videotape it. Immediately he grabbed his camera and taped the meteor, and he said, we got a bit excited, turned around, and there was this spectacular, absolutely amazing thing flying across the sky. The Chicago Fireball. Thursday, March 27, 2003, Park Forest, Illinois. Little before midnight, Robert Gaza is asleep when a meteorite pierces the roof of his house and breaks into two pieces and passes through the ceiling of his room. The smallest of the two pieces goes through the window while the second rebounds inside the room, breaking the lampshade, the mirror, and finally stopping close to a 14-year-old boy. The meteorite had exploded above the districts, Park Forest, Madison, and Steger. Buildings and cars were damaged by the impact, but nobody was wounded. Check bull eye. Saturday, May 6, 2000. Thousands of people from southern Poland to the Czech Republic observed this extremely luminous bull eye. At its maximum, the brightness was comparable to that of the sun. Just after the fireball, the fall of the meteorite was observed in the garden of a small Silesian village, and a small piece was immediately found. The El Paso shooting Lone Star, my term. Thursday, October 3rd, 1996, Alan Wood, an employee of JPL in Pasadena, California, declares in an interview with Fox TV News, there was a bright, bright flash, and then it changed colors down to oranges and reds and greens and disappeared over the top of the mountain. Other luminous phenomena occurred near Los Angeles at the same moment, casting doubt on these bolides. Had the meteorite rebounded, or were these extraterrestrials? Peekskill Fireball. Friday, October 9, 1992, at 7:50 p.m., Michelle Knapp runs to the window after hearing a meteorite that has just smashed into the trunk of her car. It's the most filmed bolide, as the majority of the 15 videos taken were at Friday night high school football games. The Spokane Fireball. This took place on February 20th, 2008. I call these Canadian pearls. Photographed on Saturday, February 5th, 1977. This is the Spanish Sparker. Sunday, January 4th, 2004. July 2nd, 2004 in Texas and Tennessee.
Yeah.
Oh, is anything giving? Yeah, there we go. All right. Yeah, security camera.
See, I think we need more security cameras so we can get more.
They do serve for
meteors,
right? Yukon Fireball. This made a lot of pressure. January 18, 2000. Left vivid trails in the upper atmosphere, and they're photographed by many, many people. The New Zealand Boomer. Okay, let's see if I can get this. This happened on July 9, 2008. Let's see if this plays, and let's see if you can hear the audio. Ready?
Oh, they had a sonic boom?
Yep, did you hear that?
Just the,
yeah.
The explosion?
Yeah. Pacific Northwest Fireball, Washington, Oregon, March 12, 2005.
in Medford caught the Firebird on fireball on tape while videotaping her son skateboarding. Now you can see the bright glowing orb above the streetlight as it streaks across the sky. Experts say it was likely a meteor the size of a football or small TV. And those who saw it say it was incredible.
Now, the reason why I bring up asteroid 2008 TS-26, it exploded tens of kilometers above the ground with the energy of 2.1 kilotons of TNT, causing a large fireball or bolide in the early morning sky. That's a photograph taken above the Earth by space shuttle. And that's the trajectory where it hit in the sand. It passed within 3,800 miles of the Earth's surface on October 7, 2008. Oh, let me see if I can get that video. You're going to give me a video? No, I'm sorry. I'm gonna give you a video. That's the, there, if the lighting was better, we could see it. And this is the gentleman who discovered it. It was notable as this was the first such body to be observed and tracked prior to reaching the Earth. 2008 TC3 fragment was found on February 28, 2009 by Peter Jeniskens. This was with help from students and staff of the University of Khartoum, Nubian Desert in the Sudan. It was a meteoroid 2 to 5 meters across or 7 to 16 feet in diameter that entered the Earth's atmosphere on October 7, 2008. And then just I'm going to close with space debris. I have a whole lecture on space debris, and you're going to hear about this more and more and more. I remember in high school when Skylab re-entered in 1979, how we all went out with football helmets on and drank beers looking for it. We did not find it, but we did find it.
Especially people in Australia.
Exactly. And then also, of course, Mir, which took place in 2001 when it re-entered. But anyways, the satellite collision is interesting because I think, given that launch of a couple of days ago, you're going to hear more and more about satellite collisions, I think, with kinetic hits. And of course, the axiom is, he who dominates space dominates Earth. February 10, 2009, a privately owned U.S. communications satellite collided with a defunct Russian satellite in the first such collision in space.
Was that delivered?
They say it's not delivered, but
it was. There's so many things, it finally happened that there was an accident.
Exactly. It was long overdue. And the space shuttle, I remember, International Space Station, the astronauts occupying there had to take defensive measures, and they had to actually maneuver Izzy. It was low orbit, and it involved the spacecraft of the privately owned Iridium Satellite LLC and a non-operational Russian communication satellite. It took place nearly 500 miles over Siberia. The crash produced a pair of massive debris clouds. I'm not going to talk about the story, but the Chinese, a few years ago, exploded a satellite in outer space, and that actually upped the amount of space junk by nearly 10% that's orbiting around the Earth. Very irresponsible, but that's what Chinese people are. China government is very irresponsible. And then this is basically, I'm going to close with this. This shows you the amount of space debris, namely satellites, that orbit the Earth. It looks like we're getting swarmed by mosquitoes here. So you're going to see more and more space junk re-enter the upper atmosphere, whether they're defunct boosters or decaying orbit satellites that are sucked into the Earth's atmosphere. And I think we're going to end on that today. But I appreciate your time, and thank you for the children who left earlier.
Yeah. Now, I'll just make a comment. Years ago, I was out with some people with telescopes who were watching, and just somebody said, oh, what's that over there? And we looked over, and near the horizon, something was breaking apart and burning up and coming down. And we didn't know what it was. Now, in hindsight, because the next day we saw something in the news about a Russian rocket booster had re-entered and burned up. If you're outside and you see something streak across the sky fairly fast, that's a meteor or a bolide or a meteor or something that will become a meteorite. If it's fast and you almost don't notice it, it's a meteor, something orbiting the sun that hits the Earth's atmosphere. If you see something that burns up and breaks apart and it's moving relatively slowly, then it is a satellite that's re-entering.
Do they come in different directions?
Well, the meteorites can come from any direction.
Right.
Satellites, depending on their orbits, could be going west to east. But if they're in an orbit that's tilted severely to the equator, depending on where they re-enter, there would still be a western to eastern motion, but there would be a north to south motion.
Right.
That'd be a little trickier than, say, an equatorial satellite.
Right.
Or whatever. But if you're moving slowly, and you kind of, if you go out, like tonight should be a good night. If you just go out and lay down in a dark place and look up, you'll probably see a fairly slow-moving little dot of light, and that will be a rocket booster or a big satellite. If you watch that motion, that's how fast a re-entering satellite or rocket body will be moving. Where a meteor, and when you watch a satellite that goes, the space station now I think is visible in the morning. You have to get up before sunrise to see the space station. And if you watch the space station go from horizon to horizon, it takes about 6 minutes to go from horizon to horizon. If you see a meteor that chunks across the sky, it'll go across the sky in seconds. So you kind of have to judge if it's quick or if it's slow, then you know it's a meteor right.
Right. If somebody says, did you see that? And you don't, when you, by the time you turn, right. As Bill says, it's a meteorite.
I saw an incredible one, but it was just, well, actually, the best I ever saw, the Pleiades back in 2000, 2001 were the best. But in the late 90s, driving to Worcester one November morning before sunrise, the Pleiades meteor shower in November was distracting me from the driving.
Wow.
I mean, I kept my eyes on the road.
2001 this was, November of 2000.
This was in 98, I think.
Wow.
Leading up to the 2000. But just around sunrise, so the sky was brightening, but keeping my eyes on the road, I could see these bright things just through my windshield. I don't know what was going on over my head. It must have been incredible, but I had to get to work and I didn't stop to watch, but it was an incredible morning. But those are fairly fast.
Rule of thumb for satellites, you have geostationary and geosynchronous. Now, geosynchronous go with the Earth's rotation, okay?
Those are pretty dim because they're 22,000 miles.
Right, and they're equatorial, east to west. Then you have the geostationary, actually the communication satellites that stay over one area of the Earth. And those could go to north and south. Those are recce birds. Those are military satellites. So generally, if you're looking the east to west, okay, that's commercial. And if you see one going like that, that's China or Russia or the United States or a spy satellite. That's the rule of thumb. So it's always interesting to look at them. And I still think that you're going to see more and more junk re-enter the Earth's atmosphere. Now that we divested from the commercial shuttle program, and I'm still trying to figure out what we as Earthlings, with the billions that we spent, that we've gleaned from that, I still haven't figured that out.
That's what I'm going to talk about it. 2 o'clock.
Okay, great. Well, thank you very much. I appreciate your time.
Thank you.
Thank you, Jeff.